Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. This is Lon Woodbury, an independent educational consultant located in North Idaho. And it is April 10th, 2015, and I have the phone, Kyle Gillette. Kyle, good morning. Glad to have you here.
Good morning, Lon. I'm really grateful to be here.
Okay, well, Kyle is going to talk about trauma and the adolescent brain. Now, he's the executive director and a founder of Solstice East in North Carolina. And, Kyle, I think a lot of people, a lot of the average person think when they think of trauma, they think of a head injury, maybe a concussion. And I think you have trauma, a much broader use of the term. So in your mind, what do you mean by trauma?
Absolutely, Lon. When I define trauma, I think of it as any type of experience in which somebody has experienced powerlessness. And that can be kind of a truly inescapable powerlessness. It can be real. It can be imagined. But any kind of powerlessness that impacts that individual's life.
Okay, so bullying, being a subject of bullying could do that. Maybe the parent's going through a divorce, or a parent that's not that's emotionally distanced, or a parent that's abusive. All those could fit in that trauma that you're talking about.
Absolutely. A lot of people categorize it as big T traumas versus little T traumas, and the big T's are the things that we see, you know, kind of like physical abuse or sexual abuse. But a lot of the little T traumas can impact the adolescent and the childhood brain in the exact same way neurologically as what we consider the big T traumas.
Okay, so let's assume that a kid has a, and we're talking primarily about adolescents, at least that's my focus, let's assume a kid has had a trauma, and what does it do to the brain if it's a trauma that really impacts them?
Absolutely. It's a great question. Well, it's really interesting because trauma affects the brain in slightly different ways, even at different ages. And so one of the things that we have learned in the last 5 and 10 years about neurological development is that the normal process of brain development follows two different patterns. One is initially at birth, the number of connections between brain cells is pretty minimal. And then around 3 months, it starts to get much more maximized. Around 2 years, it's almost chaotic. If I had a picture of brain development at that point, it would look like a bunch of lines overlapping each other, and it just kind of looks crazy. And then around 6 years, it goes back a little bit. And it's not that there are any less connections, but those connections are more organized. Now, the other pattern that I would say is that the brain develops in a sequential fashion. It starts back in the brainstem, which is kind of the more simple area that runs all of the fight or flight and all of the reflexive type things in our brain, and it moves forward in the brain to the cortex and ultimately the prefrontal cortex, which is where all of the complex developmental processes go on. And so I'll stop there for a second in case I've
okay. Well,
any
I just
questions.
Have a question. When you're talking about how it started on the second, is that what's sometimes referred to as the reptilian brain?
Absolutely, reptilian brain and brainstem are interchangeable. And so again, it's all of that initial fight, flight, or freeze response. I've heard a good friend of mine, Steve, from New Visions Wilderness say that there are 6 F's, feeling, feeding, fighting, flighting, freezing, and reproduction. And we'll keep that an F.
Okay, well, we don't need to go much further than that.
No.
Okay. All righty. So a trauma occurs. How does it do with the different ages? A couple examples. At 2, that's when it's most chaotic. And then, say, when they get to be a teen, a trauma happens at those ages. What happens to the brain?
Absolutely. Well, there are certainly different processes that a trauma can affect at any point in the brain. The biggest thing that we have learned and understood is that while that sequential development occurs from the brainstem up to the cortex, a trauma tends to take the developmental focus right back into that initial place in the brainstem. And so what would happen is, you know, at 2 it would either kind of stunt them at that level of development. And in adolescent years, that's really when the prefrontal cortex area is finally developing. Recent data says that men's brains develop, well, I'll start with women's. Women's brains develop up until they're about 23-ish or so, and men's brains don't finish developing until they're about 30. So that tells you a little bit about the maturity of the different sexes, of course.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, what happens is when a trauma impacts the brain, it immediately sends that person's primary neurological functioning back into the brain stem area. And especially if that trauma ends up being repeated, it can get an individual stuck in a cycle where the only way that they deal with challenges is by freezing, flighting, or fighting. And so it can really ratchet down their ability to what occurs within the prefrontal cortex is the process of stepping back, rationally thinking through a response in a healthy way to a challenge.
Okay, so in a layman's term, trauma messes up the normal development, and it goes back to the reptilian brain or the brainstem reactions, which mm-hmm. is pure instinct. So the kid has lost control. It's almost impossible to overcome this impulse from the brainstem.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what happens is everything becomes a threat. If everything in the world that we encounter as adults on a day-to-day basis was experienced as a threat, we would never be able to even attend to normal everyday things. I've heard it said before, in trauma, over time, everything becomes a lion. And so if we lived our lives constantly feeling like we had to protect ourselves, fight for our protection, or run like hell, then everything around us, we'd be constantly over-vigilant and not able to attend to normal life processes.
Okay, so it becomes an overwhelming thing. I think that explains why sometimes when you can talk to a teenager, when a teenager being, sometimes they're their own worst enemy, and
yes,
trying
absolutely.
To talk to them and say, can't you see how you're fouling yourself up? And they honestly can't see it. True?
Very true. Very true. A lot of times, again, there's this instinctual reaction that just simply goes into play because they have, again, whether it was bullying or some other type of trauma, their brain has been trained that any time a challenge comes up, they run, they freeze, or they fight.
Okay, so now the intervention. What
yes.
needs to be done to do this? And I presume, different from other therapies, you're really focusing on the impact on the brain, so you're very conscious of what it's doing to the brain rather than behavioral or some of the other things. So what side of intervention do you do?
Absolutely. Well, one of the things that we have, again, come to learn in recent years is that neurological connections certainly impact the way that we think, the way that we feel, but there is so much nervous system connection that is not just in our brain, but spread throughout our entire body. And so one of the things that is absolutely of utmost importance is, while providing traditional therapeutic approaches, being able to accentuate that with more non-traditional therapeutic approaches. Most of these more non-traditional ones will be focused more on brain activity and neurological intervention and or truly physical intervention. That mind-body connection is so powerful, and we find that especially in cases of trauma, it is extremely important to attend to that mind-body connection.
So you're saying experiential, what's oftentimes referred to as experiential activities, like outdoor activities or things or sports or things like that, are part of it and a very important, critical part of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It definitely is.
What's the next step? You get a sense on it, and can you think of an example of one of your students have you worked with and the changes and that when you went through this thinking and working with them? Can you get a case study type of thing?
Absolutely. Give me a second here to kind of focus in on a student. I've worked with kids that have experienced all kinds of losses in their lives, and every once in a while, one just kind of stands out above another. I'll mention just a couple, and then we'll focus in. You know, we've worked with kids that have grown up in war-torn countries where literally they were their first 3 to 4 years of their life was about living, and any time, you know, the tribal sounds came up, they would run out into the woods and or into the bush and try to keep from dying, you know, that kind of a thing. We work with kids whose parents have died. Some parents have committed suicide. I had a case that I worked with not too long ago. I wasn't the direct therapist, but the father killed the mother and then killed himself.
Oh, wow.
And I can't think of a more huge trauma. So speaking of, let's say that is the presenting situation, you end up working with a student who is kind of withdrawn and disconnected from the world. A situation in which, you know, again, when you've lost your primary caregivers to something that traumatic, around every corner there could be a lion, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are certainly plenty of approaches that need to be involved that include more of a traditional talk therapy, and that has its place. But some of the things that I have seen to be most valuable are the therapies that really, again, connect to that neurological or that body-based response. A few examples, EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reintegration, is one of the most highly research-supported approaches to healing from trauma. And it has to do a lot with bimodal stimulation in the brain, basically being able to stimulate one side of the brain and then the other side of the brain, back and forth. And that has a very powerful means of being able to, again, bilaterally affect change in the brain. And it allows to keep the gateway open between the two sides of the brain and creates more of, it allows the brain to heal in many ways. I've got another number of things to mention, and I don't want to kind of go into monologue mode. I wonder if you have any questions
okay.
thus far.
Well, we're running out about on time. Could you mention briefly, maybe you mentioned the EMDR therapy, other traditional, and then talk a little bit about solstice season. We'll wrap it up.
Oh, sure, you bet. I'll mention just a couple of others. Matter of fact, just this morning I was in a group that was, it's called TRE, or Trauma Resilience. I'm sorry, give me a second here. It's this is brand new to me, so it's Tension and Trauma Release Exercises, and it is focused almost primarily on the physical body and the way that we automatically can release some of the intense traumas, and it focuses in on the brainstem, and it really helps to calm the nervous system. And one of the biggest things that we implement in trauma, and this is at Solstice East, but in general, is we really need to help our students learn how to regulate their emotions. So regulation is a huge piece. The incorporation of other experiential activities, trauma-focused equine-assisted psychotherapy is a brand new approach to equine therapy that incorporates some incredible components that help to release trauma. You've got trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, which is something that, you know, kind of helps an individual process through trauma. A couple others that are out there, rapid resolution therapy is a process that's shown to be quickly successful in clearing trauma, especially from sexual abuse. And the emotional freedom technique is also something that can be very beneficial. Clients can actually even use it on their own to clear unresolved emotional issues.
Is that the one that uses tapping?
I believe that there is some tapping involved in that one. It's one that I'm not directly familiar with. That list that I went through are actually all different approaches to healing trauma that clinicians at Solstice East utilize. We also utilize neurofeedback as a direct way to intervene with the neurological processes in the brain and help them to develop greater health in trauma.
I gather, and I had a thought as you were talking, that, well, these are ways to free up the prefrontal cortex.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ultimately, we know that the brain is an amazing, amazing organ that can literally change its cellular structure to the extent that if a child has been traumatized and all of their connections start to force them back into that brainstem, through implementing these mind-body approaches, we can literally create new connections, erase the unhealthy ones, and create new connections that allow their thought process to operate more fully in the prefrontal cortex, and again be able to evaluate a stressful situation, step back for a second, rationally think through what might be a better way to respond than fight, flight, or freeze, and engage in the use of that healthy modality of response.
Well, that sounds very impressive, and we've about run out of time, actually gone a little over, but this is so fascinating, I wanted to keep on it. So I gather that Solstice East primarily is working with kids with trauma. Is that sort of the type?
We are. Our main focus is we work with students who've experienced trauma, loss issues, and attachment-based issues. We do work with a lot of adopted students, and I've also found that a large majority of our students have, because of those levels of desperation and depression and anxiety that all of that stuff that we've just talked about creates, they've tried to find some way to reach outside of themselves and fill that hole internally, whatever that is. And so that may include things like dabbling in substance use, engaging in unhealthy behaviors, whether that be emotional or physical or sexual behaviors, engaging in the use of self-harming techniques or eating disordered behavior, all in a unhealthy but intentional purpose to try and avoid the depression, the trauma, the gross feelings inside. Amazing young ladies, very, very wonderful kids who just have kind of gotten off course in life.
All right. Well, one last question. If somebody wanted to pick your brain a little bit more or find out more about Solstice East, how would they get a hold of you? A phone number, website, email?
Absolutely. You betcha. So I'll give you a couple. First, Solstice East website is www.solsticeeast, that's SolsticeEast.com. I am also one of the original founders of Solstice RTC. That was the first Solstice, and then we expanded out into Asheville, North Carolina. Solstice RTC is located in Layton, Utah, and their website is www.solsticertc.com. My email address is kyle@solsticeeast.com. That's K-Y-L-E. And I also, my cell phone number is probably the best way to get a hold of me. If there are direct questions that want to be run by me, that's area code 801-913-8795. And I always check my messages.
All righty. Well, very good. Well, thank you very much, Kyle. This has been very enlightening and very good. We went over time, and I think it was worth every second. Thank you very much.
Lon, my pleasure. Great to speak with you, and thanks for the opportunity.
All righty. Well, and this is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report, and if you want to find out what I'm up to, go to my website, www.strugglingteens, that's plural one word, strugglingteens.com.